This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 50 years ago, Roger McGuinn started out as a folk singer. The following decades took him through the Star Machine as one of the founders and leaders of the Byrds, one of the most popular and influential bands of the 60s and 70s. They get credit as pioneers of folk rock and for plugging the music of folkies like Bob Dylan and Pete Seeger onto the early top 40 charts. They also helped pioneer country rock. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1991, and all these years later, he's back where he started, or maybe never left. Folk singer Roger McGuinn joins us this hour. Later in the program, science fiction writer Werner Vinge on some of the implications of a world seen through Google glasses. But first, we want to hear from folkies in the audience today. How do you overcome the fustiness factor and keep your music relevant? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org, and click on Talk of the Nation. Roger McGuinn joins us here in Studio 4A. He's on tour and serves as curator of the Folk Den Project. And Roger, we play your tune, Politician, every week, so you're already a regular on the show, but it's nice to see you in person.
It's great to be here. Thank you. Thank you, Neil. I'm really honored that you play Politician all the time. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
And I understand, though, you start every concert with another of your old tunes, a Bob Dylan tune.
It's a Bob Dylan song called My Back Pages, because within the concert, I take people through my back pages, and here's the song. Crimson flames tied through my ears, growing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flame and rope, using ideas as my map. We'll meet on edges soon, said I, right beneath heated brow. But I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. And a soldier stands, I in my hand, at the mongrel dogs who teach. Fearing that I'd become my enemy in the instant that I preach. Existence led by confusion, bore mutiny from stern to bow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Half-wrecked prejudice leap forth, rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is black and white, spoke from my skull I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers, foundation deep somehow. I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. But I was so much older then, I'm younger than that.
My Back Page is Roger McGuinn with us here in Studio 4A. And am I hearing that through rose-colored hearing aids? Or that sounds like it's the same key as it was all those years ago.
It's actually a half step lower. I've tuned down to E-flat.
Uh-huh.
I found that I can hit the... no, a little better.
A little better, slightly down a little bit. So, yeah, maybe it was. But it's still there. The voice is still there.
Well, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
That's good.
That is from an era where plugging in to play that song electronically on electric guitar, that was controversial. It's hard to remember that.
Yes, it was. Although we didn't really take too much heat for it because we weren't established as folk singers like other people, like the man who wrote that song. So he took a lot of heat because he was. But no, we were kind of coming up with something new, and people liked it and went with it. And it was a lot of fun. It's interesting about that song. I did it for Bob Dylan's 30th anniversary on Columbia Records at Madison Square Garden, and they had teleprompters at the foot of the stage, and I'd learned the song off the record.
Mm-hmm.
So I got some of the words wrong. I'm looking at the official lyrics typed in from the official Bob Dylan songbook, and instead of romantic flanks of musketeers, it was romantic facts of musketeers.
Really?
Lots of different words, yeah. He said, I said, let's see, growing, and he went pounced with flames. It was a lot of things were quite different.
All those years.
Yes, and they're still different.
So you could have copyrighted your version.
Well, I couldn't, but I've gotten his words wrong before, and he got mad at me. One time we did a song, a country song called You Ain't Going Nowhere, and I reversed the order. I said, pack up your money and pick up your tent.
Tent, yeah.
And about 6 months later, he recorded it, and it came out, pick up your money and pack up your tent, McGuinn.
That's from a wonderful record, Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
The Sweetheart of the Rodeo. Gram Parsons was the catalyst for that. Chris Hillman had grown up in bluegrass music and loved country, and he invited Gram to come over, who basically replaced David Crosby when he left. So I wanted somebody to play McCoy Tyner-style piano, and I tested Gram. I said, can you play any jazz piano? He sat down and played a little sort of Floyd Kramer-style piano. I said, Right. Well, this guy's got talent. We can work with him. I had no idea that he was really George Jones in a sequin suit. You know,
later to go on to the fabulous Flying Burrito Brothers and
right.
Other such. All of those fusions, as it were, you brought rock to folk, you brought country to folk. I'm not sure country ever left folk, but in any sense, you were identified with all these fusions, these attempts to sort of modernize, if you will.
Well, we like to experiment, and when we did the Bob Dylan, Mr. Tambourine Man, and Turn, 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 they labeled us as folk rock, and we said, well, that's kind of restricting, so we wanted to break out of that label. We listened to John Coltrane and Ravi Shankar and recorded 8 Miles High, and they thought that was psychedelic.
Mm-hmm.
So then we were labeled as a psychedelic band, and we wanted to do something else, so we got into country and kept going on in different areas.
Through it all, though, folk music has been the heart of your, not only your tradition, where you grew up, where you first started to perform, but what you've been doing pretty much these last 30 years.
Yes, it has. I've always considered myself a folk singer, even though we strapped on Rickenbacker guitars and played pretty loud. But I was a folk singer at heart because we always loved folk music. I loved the melodies and the stories. And about almost 17 years ago now, I was listening to a Smithsonian Folkways record, and I said, you know, I'm not hearing these traditional songs, even in the folk clubs or on the radio or anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All the new folk singers were singer-songwriters writing wonderful material,
yeah.
But they were writing new folk songs. So I thought, what's going to happen when Odetta dies? Well, as you know, she just passed away. And Pete Seeger's, he's 92, 93, he's getting up there, so I thought I'd do something about it. I started the Folk Den out of a need to preserve the traditional side of folk music. And the Folk Den is on my website, McGuinn.com, or you can get to it just by going to folkden.com, sponsored by UNC Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a public service. It's all free. There are about almost 200 MP3s there for free download, along with the lyrics, the chords, a little story about the song, and a picture of some kind. And it's just a labor of love.
We want to hear from those folk musicians in the audience today about how you keep the music alive and relevant. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's start with Greg. And Greg's on the line with us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina.
Hey there.
Hi.
Roger, I must say you're a little bit, you just did. You sound as beautiful as you always have.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You know, I got to see you in the mid-90s, you played a small venue in Charlottesville, Virginia, and I had to feel for you because it was apparent you wore an all-silk shirt, and after the first song, you were drenched for the rest.
Well, you know, that happens. I just played in Irvington at the Town Hall, and I got drenched there, too, because we were playing with John Sebastian, and it was really warm in that venue. It's one of the hazards of performing live. You might get wet a little bit.
Yeah, great. You know, one thing that really strikes me is your attenuation to songs with great melodies. You know, of course, Dylan, a lot of his things, but some of the things that you've written too. And I always get in that debate since I'm a songwriter as well. When I'm out performing, I really will not do any song that I'm not crazy about the melody.
Good idea.
Yeah, you know, and in my opinion, it's melody over lyrics which give a song longevity. I was just curious what
about that. I think it's a combination of things. I remember when I was on Columbia Records and Clive Davis was the president, he had a formula for, you know, it's a pretty melody, a catchy refrain, a little hook here and there, and a pre-chorus and a chorus, and repeat the verse, and you're out. And so there are quite a few things that work together for making something memorable.
Bob Dylan was on Columbia Records, too. Did he tell that to Bob Dylan?
I'm sure he must have.
Yeah,
he told it to
all his songs sound exactly like that.
It's what he told everybody.
Greg, what kind of songs do you play? You write your own material?
Yes, I write. As a matter of fact, I just finished doing some stuff in Colorado with Dennis Weaver's son, you know, the actor. And the icing on the cake was throwing in some 12-string, acoustic 12-string. So,
all right. Well,
influenced by the birds primarily.
Greg, thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
Wasn't that song, wasn't there a sort of compendium song? Roger McGuinn had a 12-string guitar. It was like nothing I had ever heard.
Yeah, that was, let's see. I remember hearing
that. I remember hearing that, too. I could remember who it was, I'd be younger. here's a email question from Margaret in Little Rock. The folkies I hang out with write about computers, cats, the space program, whatever we happen to have read recently that jolts our juices, quite likely including one or another of Werner Vinge's books, for sure, several of Robert A. Heinlein's books. So that's another way to keep the material relevant.
That's cool. You know, I have nothing against contemporary folk music, and all folk songs, all traditional songs were contemporary at one time. Even Jones's Ale was new. It was from 1573, but it was about something that was happening back then.
So. It wasn't on the hit parade, but I'm not sure they had a hit parade.
It was a big hit in the pubs.
We're talking with Roger McGuinn, co-founder, former frontman of The Byrds, still touring, now also curator of the Folk Den Project, his effort to preserve folk music. We're going to hear a couple of more songs in a few minutes. Folkies, how do you keep your music relevant? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. We're talking with Roger McGuinn, co-founder of The Byrds, a band many cite as one of the most influential groups of the 1960s. We took our political junkie show on the road earlier this year to Florida, where he lives, at least when he's not on the road. And Roger was kind enough to record a special performance of our political junkie theme song for us. If you missed it, you can take a listen at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Roger McGuinn is again on tour, also working to preserve the folk music that helped launch his career through the Folk Den Project. We want to hear from fellow folkies today. How do you overcome the fustiness factor and keep your music relevant? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at that website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Roger, can we hear another song?
Yes, this is one from my latest CD, which is entitled CCD. We were going to call it 23 Songs of the Sea, but we thought CCD was kind of more fun. And it's a song about the sailors going around Cape Horn and ending up in Valparaiso, Chile, which they loved. They called it Valipo Bay, and it had nicknames like the Little San Francisco or Jewel of the Pacific. And it was a big relief to get around Cape Horn, for one thing. But when they got there, the architecture was beautiful. It had a lot of European immigrants that moved there. And they just loved being there, called Rollickin' Randy Dandy-O. Now we are headed out for the Horn. Way, hey, roll and go. Our boots and our oilskins are still in the pot. And me rollickin' Randy Dandy-O. And heave a paw, heave away. Way, hey, roll and go. The anchor's aboard. All start to me rollickin' Randy Dandy-O. And now we are warping her out through the locks. Way, hey, roll and go. The pretty young girls that come down in flocks to me rollickin' Randy Dandy-O. Goodbye to Sally and goodbye to Sue. Way, hey, roll and go. For we are the bullies that can kick her through to me rollickin' Randy Dandy-O.
muster up pulleys, a wind drawing free. Way, hey, roll and go. Let's get the rags up and we'll drive her to sea. To me, rollickin' Randy Dandy, oh. And we're outward bound for the Ballypo Bay. Way, hey, roll and go. Get crackin', me lads, it's a mighty long way to be rollickin' Randy Dandy, oh. And heave a pull, heave away. Way, hey, roll and go. The anchor's aboard and the cable's all stored to be rollickin' Randy Dandy, oh.
One of the tunes from Roger McGuinn's new CD, CD, Randy Dandy. Oh, it reminds us that the origin of so many folk tunes is work songs of one sort or another.
Yes, they're work songs and the old blues, the cowboy songs. Cowboy songs are work songs pretty much, too.
And we were talking earlier about 12-string guitar. That is not a 12-string guitar, but it's not a 6-string guitar either.
No. What happened was, I don't know if you saw that YouTube video about United Breaks Guitars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was on an airline that broke my 12-string guitar, and I thought, what if I didn't have to carry a 12-string and a 6-string if I could get the best of both on one guitar? So I went to the Martin Company and asked them to build me a guitar that had the pair of strings like the 12-string has, which is... It's a low and a high
mm-hmm.
octave string. And I play leads up and down the neck like this. Like on turn, turn, turn. But it's also more flexible. You can bend the strings like... Or do these little runs... So it's kind of like a Swiss Army knife of a guitar.
It also reminds us that there's that line in A League of Their Own, if it was easy, everybody could do it. Folk music, one way to keep it relevant to your audience, get good.
Oh, practice, right.
Yeah. Let's see if we get another caller in on the conversation. John's on the line with us from Jackson Hole in Wyoming.
Hi there. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
It's wonderful to hear Roger McGuinn. I had the great pleasure of meeting him and being an MC for a show he did here in Jackson Hole in one of the hotels back in the mid-80s. I don't know if Roger remembers that, but I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
And, of course, my favorite songs of his are Mr. Spaceman. We used to do that with a band, a local band I played in.
I love the line, won't you please take me along? We won't do anything wrong.
That's right. I won't mess with your dials.
Wonderful. And talking about staying relevant, I would like to say that here in Jackson Hole, we are really keeping folk music alive. We have a wonderful Monday night hoot that runs most of the year.
Oh, great.
And we draw really, really good crowds. And anywhere from some of us older folks or maybe up to, let me see, we're up to 80 years and down to maybe 15 years.
Mm.
We have a real fine mix of music.
I have to ask you, you just use the word hoot, as in hootenanny?
That's right. The official word is the Jackson Hole hootenanny.
Mm. Without irony.
Oh, yes. You bet. We're very happy to bring that word back.
That's cool.
That's all right.
Doing that.
John, thanks very much for the call.
Yes.
Do you play many hootenannies?
I haven't played one for years because people call it open mics for the most part now.
Yeah, I was going to suggest it's not something. You started, though, in Greenwich Village at open mic programs.
Yes. I started, really in Chicago at the Gate of Horn. They had hootenannies there every Sunday. And then when I moved to New York, I would go to the clubs and the coffee houses in the village. Yeah.
And these were at a time when you eventually wound up working professionally with people like the Limelighters and then later Bobby Darin.
That's right. The Chad Mitchell Trio and Bobby Darin.
Bobby Darin seems a ways away.
Yes, he seems in Congress, but he had a love of folk music. He loved folk music. And he was such a talented guy that he could really devote himself to it wholeheartedly when he did it. But he did that Sinatra thing that mm-hmm. he did and the Splish Splash, the teeny bopper music. But when he did folk songs, he really got into them. He was really good.
Huh. Let's get another caller on the conversation, though we just seem to have lost our computer call-in screen. So let's take an email. This is from Kevin. For Roger, how do you feel about the influence of your music on other artists such as Tom Petty? Are there artists who have been influenced by your music you particularly like?
Yeah, well, I've heard about that. People have told me that other artists have been influenced by my music, and it's flattering. It's a wonderful thing.
But do you consciously listen for it?
No, I don't. I don't listen for it. But I hear it when it's out there. I can hear like the sort of jingle jangle sound, as they call it.
Here's another email, this one from Bell. Could Roger speak about working with the Wrecking Crew on the early Byrds recordings? It's a great, mostly unknown history of rock.
Right. Most people, well, now it's come out. There's a book and there's a film about it. But the Wrecking Crew was sort of a secret in Hollywood where Phil Spector used them for all his recordings and the Beach Boys for quite a few of theirs and the Mamas and Papas. And Terry Melcher, who was Doris Day's son and our producer, decided to use the Wrecking Crew for the single Mr. Tambourine Man and the flip side, I Knew I Want You. Mm-hmm. Of course, David Crosby and all the other Byrds went nuts and campaigned, and we got to play on all our records after that. But the first single was with the Wrecking Crew, and I was honored because I'd had about 5 years of studio experience in New York, so they let me play with them. Mm-hmm. And I was these guys were, you know, 5, 6 years older, 7 years older. Leon Russell, Hal Blaine, Jerry Cole, Larry Nechtel, and Bill Pittman were in the studio at the time. And they were the coolest guys. They were like James Dean, you know, they wore black leather jackets with the collar up, and very cool. I was honored, and they were so tight. I mean, you could really not get anything between the beats. You know, it's really solid music.
But it was portrayed at the time that somehow the record company didn't trust you guys to play your own music.
Well, they were right. Michael Clark learned how to play on cardboard boxes only a couple of months before that. You know, he wasn't ready for the big time. So it worked out.
Let's get another caller in. Josh is on the line. Josh with us from Tulsa.
Hi, Roger. I recently discovered your album Thunderbird, and it struck me, the material on it struck me as slightly atypical of some of your more traditional works, and I was just wondering if there was anything specific that changed how you approached that album compared to some of the earlier works that you've done.
Let's see, I did American Girl on that, right? Is that right? Yeah. And I think it was a little more hard-edged, more rock-oriented than some of the earlier stuff that I'd done.
And I was just wondering if you consciously pushed to the back of your mind some of your folk influence, or if that still you felt, you know, bled through in those sessions?
I don't know. It was just what I felt like doing at the time. It's hard to really pin it down.
Sure, I understand. Well, I usually when I perform live, I have my beat-up old 60s Framus, a classical, and I'll be performing on my songs, and I get lumped in with a lot of folk or bluegrass musicians, but you know, I perform only originals, and almost all of my topics have to do with science or skepticism.
That's wonderful.
It's really hard to stay, I don't know, maybe relevant in the folk scene when nobody really wants to hear about that stuff. And I didn't know if that was anything you'd ever encountered when you started to maybe...
No, it was just, you know, I was just going for a different sound at the time. So just practice. That's all there is to it.
Josh, sure. Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
And we've gotten any number of emails that helping us out with our memories. The lyric Roger McQuinn had a 12-string guitarist from Willie Waylon and Me by David Allan Coe.
I remember I was on the Rolling Thunder tour, and we were on the bus. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning, and this guy, David Allan Coe, walked on the bus, which was kind of a no-no. You know, strangers walking on the bus. I didn't know who he was. And he had a guitar, and he said, "I got to show you a song." And that's even worse. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I went, "Oh, no." So, but then he sat down, and he sang that song, and I went, "Oh, wow." That was a real honor. So thanks, David Allan Coe.
Here's an email from Terry. Wow, I just listened to Roger, a.k.a. Jim McGuinn, play My Back Pages while driving back from lunch. I hadn't heard that since the 60s, yet I sang along as the words came back to me, even going into David Crosby's harmony, "I'm Still Smiling."
Wonderful. That's great.
Jim McGuinn, well, that's kind
of
your name.
I'll tell you about that. Back in the 60s, we experimented with quite a few things.
Really?
Yes.
I'd not heard that.
And one of them was this Eastern sort of spiritual exercise. And I went in there, and they said, well, if you change your name, you'll vibrate better with the universe. And that sounded groovy. So I went for it.
You went for the middle name.
Yeah, I changed my middle name to Roger and started using it as a stage name, and I've been doing it ever since. I thought about changing it back. It would be too confusing now.
Roger McGuinn is here with us in Studio 4A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News. And I wanted to ask, you'd mentioned earlier, I know you're going to play 8 Miles High for us. Psychedelic music, drugs played such a terrible role for so many people in the 60s. And, well, we all know about David Crosby's struggles.
Yes.
And yet this is still a critical part of the band's existence. And was it part of your life, too?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was I experimented with a lot of things back then, and that was one of them.
And the song, you have no problems playing it now?
No, I have no problem. Well, see, there are three riders on 8 Miles High, and it was about an airplane ride over to England and back, and that's what I always thought it was. But if you ask David Crosby what it's about, he says, it's about drugs, man.
Well, let's hear for ourselves.
Okay. Over the years, it's kind of evolved from the recording we did in the Byrds, and I put a little John Coltrane, some Ravi Shankar, and some Andre Segovia in just for fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just shapeless forms, sidewalk scenes, and black limousines. Some living, some standing alone.
Roger McGuinn, whose next 50 years begin May 4th at the Jefferson Center in Roanoke, Virginia. Then on to the Ryman in Nashville with Marty Stewart. His tour continues there. Stay with us. Up next, science fiction writer Werner Vinge on seeing the world through Google glasses. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.